I am delighted by this movie. I love WALL-E. When I was going to college, the college that I ended up going to, the New England Institute of Art, they brought in the director of this movie as a guest speaker.
Okay.
And so before I even went to the school and I was just like looking at it, I sat and watched the director and watched the first 15 minutes of this movie. And I don't think, when did this come out, 2008?
Yeah, June 27th, 2008.
Yeah, so I was, it was either like just come out or it was just about to come out.
I mean, granted, it did take just over 4 years to make, so yeah. They had a lot of time to gather a lot of footage.
Yeah, right. So, but it was really cool. I loved the use of Hello Dolly.
Yep.
In this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great throughout. Yeah, so that's my little tidbit about there the trailer go. Of that movie.
That's probably the nicest intro we've done on this show yet.
Yeah, you know, I thought about trying to
18 episodes in, and we finally got a decent one.
We got a decent one.
Still didn't say the name of the show. Hi, everybody! It is that movie show.
Yeah, whatever.
Mike Wendt, Liam Stryker, Bill Neville producing. Thank Hello. You. And today, yes, we are covering the 2008 Disney and Pixar film
Academy Award winning, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so. Let me see. We'll get there. But yes,
I'll take a look.
We'll get there. But yeah, WALL-E. And I just wanted to say this right off the top because we are a show that never stops working.
Nope.
Despite when the whole crew takes off out of state, we're not going to be near each other. But this is why you need to subscribe for the live shows. Because those of you that are tuning in live, whether it's via Twitter or Periscope, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Or on twitch.tv/NewAgeInsidersTV.
Yeah.
You get two shows tonight. So those,
yeah,
of, those of you listening on demand, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, you're hearing this post-tense. Is that right? Post-haste? Post-tense?
Post-haste is fast.
You're listening to this after I'm saying it. But this is why you got to tune in for the live shows, because those of you that are tonight, stick around after WALL-E, because we have a second show. We're going to have next week's show for you live right here before anybody else. See?
Wow.
Exclusive bonus, and we're not even charging you. How good is that?
Yet.
Depends on what kind of sponsors we get. But yes, we are checking out WALL-E today. I couldn't agree with your intro anymore. It is a... I watched it this morning, and it was one of those movies that when I watch it, I just sit there smiling.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's such a heartwarming, endearing movie, and done so through limited dialogue, which I absolutely loved.
That's probably my favorite part about it. I mean, Bill Neville's a monster and doesn't like it.
Yes.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I said it's not my favorite.
Oh, sure. Look, we live in a world of extremes, Bill. All right, you either love it or you hate it.
No, that's
it,
not
right?
true.
And you hate it, so
that's
I
false.
Get it.
I feel this is one of the great examples, in my opinion, of, and I know I'm biased. I mean, Jesus Christ. Two out of three of us are sitting here wearing Disney apparel.
That's
true. I think we're, and Bill, every time we end the show, shows us something new on YouTube from Disney. This is definitely a Disney forward show.
For sure.
I don't think we make any bones about that. But this, in my opinion, is one of the great examples of how great Disney is at telling stories and why... No matter what the other animation studios do, they'll just never be to that level of Disney. Even to the point of when Disney didn't own Pixar, you know, and it was like Pixar was starting to do things and do different stuff. And they're like, oh, these guys have something going on over here. So we're going to bring them into our fold. Like originally, I actually watched, there's a great documentary on the Blu-ray of WALL-E that I watched after it. It's the story of Pixar. To the point of how John Lasseter, who is basically he is Pixar.
He is.
You know, he's as much as Pixar as Steve Jobs was as Pixar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he is the man and has been the man for a while up until, you know, recent shenanigans happened, or the whole whatever the hell. But originally he was fired.
Yes.
He went to them with the idea for the Brave Little Toaster.
Yeah.
And they basically looked at him because it was going to be the first movie to blend traditional animation with computer animation. And when he told them that it was going to cost basically the same as a normal animation, the studio head that he was talking to said, well, the only reason we would use computers is if it saved us money. You're fired.
Yeah.
Fucking fired him.
I know.
You know what I mean? So when he went to work elsewhere and started winning awards and started, you know, really making a name for himself, they're like, oh, we need to get this guy back.
Yeah, right.
And that was, he was working for Pixar and Steve Jobs, and they, because Pixar wasn't always Disney.
Right. No, you know, it was separate.
It was separate.
That's why we get the two logos still.
Exactly. And so when they were, but Pixar wasn't making money. They were very creatively forward, and the people behind them were artists in every sense of the word, but not business people. Despite having right. Steve Jobs behind you, you know, that doesn't mean you're going to make money. You can spend a shitload of money, but it doesn't mean you're going to make the money back. So when Disney went back to Lasseter to try to bring him back into the fold, it was one of those things. It's like, well, do you stick with your company that's probably not going to be around in a month or two, or do you bring it over to this already formed corporation
right.
and that will foster your stories and your dreams and whatnot.
Right, and let you do whatever you want.
And now, I mean, we're all one happy family. I mean,
right.
there is literally Pixar Land
yeah.
that's opening,
opening
this summer, right?
Pixar, so Pier, Pixar yeah, Pier. Toy Story's opening in Orlando, and Pixar Pier is in California.
Yeah, they're also right. opening one in Shanghai, or already opened a Toy Story Land in Shanghai.
I believe so.
And so hopefully I'll be going there in June.
That's right. You are going there.
So I'm going back to
Shanghai. So you're going Shanghai in June.
Yep.
The Toy Story Land opens, I believe, in June.
Yes, that's correct.
So you're going to see both of them.
I will see both of them.
In 1 year.
Hopefully.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. You're going to have to take a lot of videos, build YouTube content. I mean,
yeah,
see how many
right.
views those goddamn videos get every time we watch them. It's like, wow, that's got six figures on it. That's got six figures
yeah,
on
right.
it.
Yeah, right.
Build that brand.
Right.
What are we talking about the movie yet?
No, we haven't talked about
it. Let's get into the movie.
Well, kind of.
Let's get into WALL-E. So it was never really established. If you did enough math, you could probably figure it out. There was little hints and Easter eggs and stuff throughout the movie. But there's actually a DVD short that's on the Blu-ray as well called Bernie, which is basically the story of another robot that's the ship's name? Come on, help me out here.
The Axiom?
The Axiom, yes. So on this DVD short, it's called Bernie, and he is a maintenance droid
yeah.
on the Axiom. And basically, it's all of the little... all he's trying to do is fix one light post.
Yeah.
Just one friggin' light post. And it was told in almost conjunction with the WALL-E story that we saw.
Okay.
But it's like every time WALL-E would do something, it would screw up him trying to fix this. He's soldering and welding the post back onto its stand there, and all of a sudden WALL-E comes by as he's approaching the Axiom and waves to him, and as he goes to wave, his hand is a blowtorch and it cuts the thing in half, so he has to start all over again.
Right.
And it's just him going back and forth and back and forth, and it's cute. But what it does tell us about the movie itself is that it takes place in the year 2805.
Yeah.
So we have abandoned Earth for
yep.
700 years.
Yeah. Walmart has built spaceships.
Yes, they have.
They're by and large.
I've done one cruise in my life.
Yeah.
And this is very, very much
very,
every part of what I didn't like about a cruise.
Yeah. No, thank you.
No, it wasn't a good time at all, but this is very indicative of very a future cruise.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. Like, we talked about on when we did Demolition Man.
Yeah.
The accuracy of some of the future gadgets, and that was told back in the 90s.
Right.
This, I feel, is very telling.
Oh, yeah.
Of us as a society.
Yeah, the lawn chair thing.
The floating chairs. They literally never do. It's all voice activated.
Right.
Drink, and the drink pulls right up.
Yeah.
You know.
And it's also the same thing where it's less like, hey, your jumpsuit, it's red. Make it blue.
Blue is the new red. And they literally just go, okay, blue. And they just turn blue.
Right.
I mean, cool future stuff like that. But it is instant shopping.
Yeah.
Instant gratification.
Right.
But also, and it was something, there's two main human characters that are basically cruise goers. And they're played by John Ratzenberger and Kathy Najimy. They're called John and Mary.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, and they're the only two people that really interact with WALL-E.
Right.
Well, because
everybody's
ship.
So...
They all have screens in front of their face.
Right.
Like we do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Kathy Najimy was the first one, Mary, where her screen got knocked off or broken or
something
like that.
Because of WALL-E.
Because of WALL-E. And all of a sudden, she looks up and sees the world around her outside of this screen and literally goes, I didn't know we had a pool.
Yeah.
I mean, with those five pools that have been there the whole time. And same thing with John. When he realizes, same thing, Wally kind of screws up his thing and he looks out, he's like, oh. And then they end up actually enjoying their own company as opposed to just... Because there's a scene where, when Wally first arrives and he's kind of motoring through and there's two people on their floaty chairs.
Right.
Floating along and they have screens.
And they're talking to each other. Right.
They're literally Skyping beside each other. And it's such one of those things that, yeah, that's pretty much where we've gotten to.
Right.
And where we're going.
Right.
In a lot of unfortunate ways, we're just going to be fat slug-like people
who just
demand things by voice and get them.
Yeah. It was very scary because that's the thing is that it's from top
Alexa,
to bottom.
Alexa, buy me a donut and a drone will drop a donut in your lap.
Right. That's kind of what it was. And it's just like all of the amenities of the ship are really cool. And they're not experiencing any of them because one of the things is Mary gets knocked offline. And I think the first thing she sees is a window out into space. And she's like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And now she's lived her entire life
on that ship. Yeah.
And this is the first time she's looking out the window.
The first time they're ever seeing the world outside of their screens. What they were told. It's also there's a lot of elements of they live in there. The Roddy Piper, John Carpenter movie,
where it's
like, you know, buy, consume, eat, this. It's all consumer-based lifestyles.
Right, and...
Even the schooling. They have the nursery with the babies,
right.
And it's like, A is for Alexium, where you live and travel.
B is for buying large.
Is for buying large, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so the movie starts with 15 minutes of no...
22, actually.
22 minutes of no dialogue.
39 minutes before the first human voice.
Right, because, yeah, even Wally and Eva, they just whiz and computer squeak back and forth at each other, you know? So we find a world that is broken, and Wally is a line of robots.
Mm-hmm.
That are basically left behind to clean up all of this trash.
Yeah, they're basically robotic trash compactors.
Right. And the weird thing, the thing that I always wondered about it was, in theory, they were programmed to make those towers of trash.
Mm-hmm.
What was step two? You know what I mean? Like, okay, so we're going to get the robots. They're going to put all of it in one spot. And then are they just going to incinerate it? What?
Well, no, I don't believe. See, what I believe happened was, based off of the propaganda films that were still playing.
Right.
They didn't expect the world to go quite so far to shit.
Right.
So they were, okay, we got a lot of trash here. There's a lot of smog here. Let's jump on these cruise ships and go take a tour around space for a while. Let the Wally drones clean up the thing. We'll come back and rebuild.
Right.
But it was just too much.
Yeah, it was just too much.
And then once no people came back, there was no farming. There was no, you know, pizza farms.
As Captain
Jeff Garland finds out. But yeah, there was nothing left.
Well, and the crazy thing is...
And people just kept jumping on spaceships and leaving Earth.
Right. And so then Wally's basically just left. He's like the last one.
Well, he's the last of the Wally and robots, basically.
Right.
And... he's doing his job because that's all he's programmed to do.
Right.
So what I believe he's a solar powered robot.
Yes.
And there was a part in it when Eve shuts down because she also has a directive.
Correct.
And once she completes her directive, she shuts down.
Right.
Wally, not knowing anything but himself and how he
works, that she's...
he holds her in front of the sun and keeps looking up at the sun. Why isn't she powering? I power in the sun.
Right.
Why isn't she? So, I mean, stuff like that, but it's done in such, for lack of a better term, an adorable way.
Right.
Like, you just sit there like, God damn, these people are good. These people are really, really good at what, like, just, and it's not like cheap pulling at your heartstrings. It's like you actually feel emotion through these computer-drawn robots.
Right. Oh, yeah.
that aren't conveying any words.
Right. You can feel the newfangled of like a new relationship between the two of them when she comes down. And, you know, he's genuinely concerned for her when he finds the plant and she ends up getting it inside of her.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, and like starts to take off. You know, that's what sets the whole thing in motion. Right. Of like, he's like, oh, no, I don't want her to leave.
Right.
You know,
I mean, he's immediately smitten with her. Yeah. It's adorable little, like, you know, playful stuff, and she wants none of it.
Right.
She's all about them business.
Yeah, she's a business robot.
She is a hardened business woman, and she's going to get her job done.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's just, there's so much stuff that happens in the first 20 minutes before Eve even shows up.
Right.
I mean, Wally has a friend who's a cockroach.
Yep.
Again, keeping that myth going, because we see in his little home, his truck,
yeah,
that the only thing that would survive an apocalypse is cockroaches and Twinkies.
Yep. And so he's got,
because he feeds a Twinkie to the cockroach,
which is the funniest thing, watching the cockroach jump in the little cream.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But he's also collected. He's right. He's kind of a hoarder.
He is. Well, I think he's finding cool things in the trash that he likes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he's just like, oh, this is a fun thing that I like, so I'm gonna keep it.
And plenty of Easter eggs throughout. I mean, if you look very closely on multiple viewings of Wally's little home there, there is a Rex doll.
Yep.
There's the ham piggy bank.
Yep.
A lot of Toy Story stuff. He actually, when he's out doing his job, when he's, you know, collecting garbage and building his little towers, he goes through a Pizza Planet truck,
yep.
which shows up in a lot of, almost
everything.
All of the Pixar movies.
Every one of them.
Almost as much as John Ratzenberger.
Yeah.
Who is literally in this. He's one of the few human voices.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the three.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's him, Kathy and Jimmy, who plays Mary, and Jeff Garland is the captain. Then this is actually the first movie that incorporated animation and live action people.
Yes.
As far as Pixar was concerned.
Yeah, correct.
Because Fred Willard plays what appears to be the president, but it actually, if you look at the crest,
he's the president,
the CEO.
By and large.
But it has a presidential seal because that's all that's left in the world.
Right. It's the company has taken over.
Of course it's Fred Willard.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Devious yet.
The voice of the main computer in the Alexium.
Is it Alice? No.
It is Sigourney Weaver.
Okay, yeah, that's the
Sigourney
name.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
It plays that. Wally had a budget of $180 million, came back with $533.3 million, so they did okay for themselves.
Right.
Took just over 4 years to make. They started around 2003. It was released, as I said, on June 27th, 2008.
Right.
And it was directed by Andrew Stanton. So you said that was the guy you met?
Yes.
Okay. And some of the cooler stuff about, like, little tidbits of little internet research. Andrew Stanton and his entire Pixar team, every day they would break for lunch, would actually sit and watch Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton movies.
Oh, okay.
They would just go through all of them, the shorts, the features, every day, basically inspiring the possibilities of entertainment without words.
Right.
You know, simply through visual storytelling.
And it's like, I love that sort of stuff. That's a thing that I'm like intrigued to watch Unsane, because it's a movie shot completely on an iPhone, and I'm interested to watch
that's
Quiet
Soderbergh,
Place,
right?
Yeah, The Quiet Place, mm-hmm. because the whole gimmick is don't speak because there's like a monster or something that'll eat you, and so it's like I like that added element to the story, that it's like, let's see if we can tell a story about robots that don't talk, right?
All they say, they beep and say their own name,
right.
And a funny fact about that, Elisa Knight, who provides the voice of Eve, not an actress, just simply a Pixar employee that they were like, hey, go ahead, try it.
Yeah, can you do it? Yeah.
Can you do it? And damn it, she could.
Yeah.
Because there was, you know, there was a level of tone, and there was a level when Wally was in trouble, there was a level of concern that you felt in it. And I highly suggest anybody who's into filmmaking in general, checking out the bonus features on the DVD or Blu-ray, because especially the one that really grabbed me was about the sound design. They went straight old school Foley, like the old men in the warehouse ripping the tape.
Yeah, right.
For the cockroach clicking, it was actually handcuffs.
Oh, okay.
Just cool shit like that, you know, showing. But they went back because these guys had been the sound designers for Disney animated films going back to Dumbo and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it's like they were showing, you know, how to do rain effects and how they make, you know, train whistles and all this other stuff. And it's just, it's so cool to, and the fact that they, one of the things I love about these Disney and Pixar Blu-rays is they don't skimp. They're not just resting on, hey, here's a great movie that we know everybody's going to love and everybody's going to buy. And by and large, they are for children.
Right.
But here's some stuff that the adults will find really friggin' cool. Here's like 3 hours of documentary footage of, you know, going back to Walt Disney himself and all this other stuff. It's like, we didn't need that. They didn't need to include that, but the fact they did, I spent, instead of just spending 98 minutes watching WALL-E today, I spent 4 hours watching all of the bonus stuff, all the documentaries.
That bonus stuff is always really cool. I mean, if it's something that you're curious about.
Especially if you're into stuff like that.
Right. You know, they're so well made and put together now that, you know, they shoot a whole nother movie to put on the DVD and the Blu-ray.
Most of the time, multiple ones.
You know, so, like, all of the stuff that was for The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they went through and they shot like 2 or 3 separate documentaries.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just, if you like Star Wars, that's cool.
Yep.
Not a movie person. And it's the same thing with Pixar.
Yep.
You know, they put so much care and detail into everything that it's just like, yeah, let's take a look at it.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting.
Let's show you how we do it.
Right.
Let's let you behind Willy Wonka's chocolate factory and show you exactly how all of this comes together.
Right.
And just, yeah, even that, watching them create, like the fact that they were having trouble having a film-like or realistic approach to WALL-E's world.
Okay.
It was coming off as too slick and too computer-generated.
Right.
So they brought Richard Deakins in for a day.
Okay.
And literally, the whole thing is on this documentary of him setting up a set, showing them how to light for real camera work and all this other stuff. And he has one of the Pixar employees sitting in a chair. And he's got the, you know, the big 35mm camera, and he goes, okay, set that light up and put drop cloud there and fill light and this, all this other stuff. And the guy's got like 7 lights on him, and he's sitting there, and in his interview part, he's like, I wanted to drag this out for an hour, but I couldn't contain myself after 30 minutes. And so they cut back to the actual footage of him in the soundstage, and it's like 50 employees, and he turns to me, goes, well, I'm surprised and very honored that you guys haven't walked out or just fell asleep at this point. But what I want you to do is take a look at that guy over there. And there's just some grip standing next to a light. And because the barn door had opened a little bit, it was just casting this cool accented light on him. And he goes, that's what you want.
Right.
He spent a half an hour lighting this subject, like 7 lights. And he's like, yeah, that guy. The accident over there. That's what you want to look like. He's like, just get down to basics and how light would actually react. And he did. He spent quite a few days on it. And I mean, this guy, he just won his Oscar, but he's been a cinematographer of some of the greatest movies we've ever seen.
Right.
You've all loved his work if you're into film. And him coming in and sitting down with them and, you know, explaining camera movements and how, because he's talking to computer people.
Right.
You know, they're not physical. You know,
they don't work
physical
in
sets. They don't work in a physical world.
Yeah, they work in a purely digital world, which is weird because you look at computer programs and there is lights and stuff. So, you know, especially the way maybe because now you look at it and there's so much.
This was 2003, 2004 when they were making it.
Right.
And I mean, but even that, it's like, there's lights in those programs, but when you're trying to really make it
you look at something
authentic.
Like Coco.
Yeah.
You know, I think we don't get to Coco unless you have Richard Deakins come in and sit down on WALL-E.
Exactly.
Because you think about it, it's, you're looking at Finding Nemo, where it's very computery,
mm-hmm.
both Toy Stories, which is very computery,
mm-hmm.
The Incredibles, which is cartoony.
The ones, I remember it, part of the documentary, the one thing they had, one of the biggest hurdles Pixar has had was the hair in Monsters, Inc.
Yep.
And how that would react and how it would move. And again, I'm watching it. I'm like, you know, we just take that shit for granted. You know, we as viewers sit there and like, oh, okay, that looks good. Not thinking that just making the hair react in a certain way probably took a year and a half.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody probably went through a year and a half of their life.
Well, it's funny because that's on the special features of the DVD for Monsters,
Inc. I'm sure it is, yeah.
And it's so funny watching the tests that didn't work for Sully's hair. It's nuts.
And speaking of stuff that didn't work, originally, the humans on the Axiom weren't humans.
Oh, really?
They were aliens. They were basically Jell-O people.
Okay.
So, and there's some test footage of it, and it's funny because in one of the documentaries, there's a guy talking, and you see, if you know what it is, you'll pick it up right away. Right over his shoulder on like a shelf is three of the basically models that they made,
okay,
of these Jell-O people. And they kind of looked like
the blob.
No, kind of flubbery, but with like a happier face.
Okay.
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 So actually almost kind of like Kofi Kingston's face behind you there, but basically picture it in flubber.
Okay.
So basically what they did is they had a mold, and they literally just poured Jell-O into this mold, green Jell-O, stuck it on a stand, and they've documented all of it. And he's sitting there just poking it and moving it and seeing, okay, how it wiggle on camera and all that other stuff. And it got pretty far in the writing process and to the fact that they were actually making these things and testing them on camera until somebody's like, yeah, but there's no heart to them.
Yeah, right.
There's no... Like, there's no...
It's a fun thing, but it's
it
just...
Was, yeah, it was a fun thing that just didn't resonate once it actually went to practice. It was it was okay.
So you make the people Jell-O.
Exactly. Well, that's kind of how it evolved. So it went from... But, okay, so... The second stage wasn't green alien Jell-O people. It was gray, same thing, same model, but these gray molded Jell-O people.
Okay.
If the scene they basically laid out was the captain waking up.
Okay.
And you know how it pans across all the former dead captains.
Right. Yeah.
Well, in the second version of the story, it was almost like, you know, you ever seen the evolution chart? It goes from monkey to man.
Oh, so they started out
started
as people,
humans.
And then they eventually get to the gray thing.
Devolved into these gray Jell-O
blobs.
Molds.
Yeah, okay. That
but basically, sense. Again, that was a bit too dark at the time.
Yeah, right.
So instead, they just kind of made them the big babies that we became to see in the movie. Again, very very telling of where we're heading in life, I think.
Right.
Another fun fact about it was one of the very few Pixar movies that the credits went very quick. I know I'm talking about end credits and, you know, at this point, but the credits went very quick and I wasn't even really paying attention that I was watching the credits.
Yeah,
because I was also working on my computer at the same time.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, and you guys saw it at the beginning of the trailer, they ran that the Pixar thing where Luxo Jr. the lab comes out and its bulb breaks, Wally comes out, fixes the bulb with a, you know, a little bit more energy efficient light.
Right.
But also what ran was the By and Large logo.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
I
like,
never
boom,
noticed
boom,
that.
Boom, boom, thank you for buying.
Oh, like, very fun. Very, very fun.
All right. Consume.
Yeah, right. Of course. I just loved that the music in this was so great. Again, it was Hello Dolly.
It was.
You know? And
which was what Wally was watching the whole time, because he found a working VCR.
Right, he found a working VCR and a VHS copy
and,
of this.
Okay, he found a working VCR, VHS copy of this, and was such a technical wizard here that he was able to hook it up to an iPod.
Yes.
To project it, and then found a magnifying glass, a giant one.
Right, that he
basically turned into a big flat screen TV.
Right, it was very, very weird.
Good on you.
Yeah, good job. Good job, Wally. You done did it. But to the point where, like, all of the robots start singing it in their own way, and it just becomes a great theme for the movie. You know, it's very interesting. I think that it's funny because it talks about directive and everything. And Alice, I want to say it's Alice, but the ship's AI.
Okay.
The ship's AI is basically the one that's keeping them away and turns out to be the bad guy.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I'll get there.
Yeah, because the central plot of the movie is that Wally
No, it's Auto.
Is it Auto?
Because it's short for autopilot.
Oh,
because
right,
Because it's made like a...
Who's Alice, then?
I don't know who the hell Alice is. I think Alice might be the Sigourney Weaver computer board. I'll get there in a second. But Auto is basically... It's made to be like a.
It was like a ship's wheel.
A ship's wheel, yeah.
Right, yeah.
But also very much based on HAL from 2001.
Right. They find the evidence that plant life is growing again on Earth.
Right.
Right, in that little bean sprout.
Mm-hmm.
And so It's just weird because the autopilot is told, don't ever come back. Whatever you do, don't ever come back.
Right.
And that's why.
But again, just following directions.
Right. Everybody's just
the goddamn computer, man, is just going to follow directions.
Right.
It doesn't have a soul.
Right.
But apparently they do.
Yeah, but apparently they do. And that's what we find.
Ship's computer. It wasn't Alice at all. Ship's computer was Sigourney Weaver.
Then I don't know who.
Otto, which was the what we were just talking about, is credited as Macintalk.
Macintalk?
Which I'm guessing is a computer-generated thing, because there's a lot of Apple references, Macintosh references.
Yeah, right.
I mean, when Wally recharges his batteries, it's the old Apple boot-up sound. Oh, I forget what
right,
the hell.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
But you know, you've known it. Looking at what Macintalk
you know what,
is.
You know what I'm thinking? I am thinking from Resident Evil.
Well, she was named Alice.
Yeah.
And that was not a heartwarming tale about love.
No, not at all.
Where the fuck did that come from?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell Macintalk is. Macintalk was born in 1984 in California, and it's a voice stuff. I think it's a software. It's got to be.
Sure.
It's all voice stuff for computers, so it's got to just be. It's weird that it has a better IMDb than I do.
Yeah, checks out. That checks out.
But yeah, so the lots of Hello Dolly in there. The director was one of those things like the Put On Your Sunday Clothes song was always just kind of always playing in the background type of thing, and it was always one of those driving forces of the movie. I just lost where I was.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit because I want to know. So, Bill.
Please do.
Bill, why didn't you like this? Or why don't you like this as much as other Pixar movies?
I think the big thing for me, and you said you liked it because of this, but I think the big thing for me was the no dialogue for the first 25 minutes. It kind of took me out of it. And my attention span isn't all that great to begin with. So if there's not a conversation or something happening to draw me in, I kind of tune out.
Right.
And like I said, the first two times I think I watched this, I fell asleep before any dialogue. But I just watched it about an hour ago finished it about an hour ago. And I did enjoy it. It's just not my favorite.
Right.
Okay. Fair enough.
Now,
I guess in that respect, it is something you have to want to watch.
Yes, exactly.
Like, it's not gonna, like, if it was just on the background, if I was like doing something else and I'm just flipping channels, it's like, oh, well, I'll leave it on Wally and keep working. Yeah, I probably wouldn't resonate because all you're hearing is ambient music.
You have to watch
it
intently.
You have to want to actually watch it because it's storytelling through a visual medium as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, you can't have it on the background.
You can't sit there and just be playing on your phone and listening to the movie as it goes. You know? It's like, oh, I just missed the whole point of this.
Yeah, right.
Wally, the name. Do you know where it came from?
No.
Bill?
Nope.
Walter Elias Disney.
Oh.
Yep.
Very fun.
Eve is not so romantic. It's, I just lost it. It's basically her job.
Yeah. She's like
agriculture, not agriculture. That's an A, but, the V stands
for environmental
vegetation, something or other.
Yeah.
They said that at some point in the movie, didn't
they? Yes, they did. But basically, her job is to go around looking for this plant life.
Right.
And when she does find it, of course,
we kick into the plot of the movie.
Yeah, that's the whole crutch of the movie. It's like, it's terrible that she found it because that means we have to turn around and by and large has to stop all these, you know, $40 soda machines.
Yeah, right. Well, it's weird because they're basically the government. I don't know. I don't think it would have mattered for them. You know what I mean?
Well, it would. Well, clearly it would because people want to go home. When Jeff Garland plays the captain.
Yeah.
So when the captain kind of, you know, and he's a very, like, what you would expect. Okay, this thing's been going on for 700 years. As I said, he's got the pictures of all the past dead. He's like captain number 40 on this ship.
Yeah, something like that.
And he's literally going through the motions. Wakes up, I missed morning meeting, okay, and what's this? The computer's just like, nothing's changed, of course. Nothing's changed, of course. Yeah. Nothing's changed, of course.
He wants excitement.
He barely puts his uniform on. His hat's askew. But at some point, he figures out because this plant thing. Now, I'm always forgetting the actual meaning of MacGuffin. Is the plant the MacGuffin?
Yeah, the plant's the MacGuffin.
All right, I got that one. this plant keeps coming up. Of course, Eve's heart, for lack of a better term, keeps glowing in the plant icon.
Right.
And they're trying to dispose of it.
Yeah, they're trying to get rid of
it. The ship itself, all the robots on the ship are trying to dispose of it because that's their prime directive.
Correct.
Much like Terminators.
Yeah, right.
Again, Wally, Skynet, we're not far away from this shit. You know, they are going to take over and they will start thinking for themselves. And so once the captain starts getting all this information, he starts going through and finding, and it's basically the easiest way to describe what the captain does to gain the information that he gets at the end is almost like going down a Google rabbit hole.
Right.
Because they're saying something, like, so what is this? And the computer describes what the dirt is, also known as Earth. Define Earth.
Yeah, right.
Then she defines Earth, and all of a sudden videos start popping up. This is Earth, and this is that.
Yeah, he just
and
goes down all this of a sudden, hole.
We cut away, and we're watching Wally and Eve on their shenanigans, and then we come back, and he's got 40 tabs open.
Yeah, he's got
pizza. He's got farming, and he feels that you can grow pizza in a farm. But you know what? God bless him.
He's doing the
work, and now he wants to go home.
Right. Now he wants to
because
go to Earth.
Because he knows that this plant means that this is possible.
Right.
And he also is seeing it as he believes it still is.
Correct.
Until Eve, who shows up, and he realizes this is the plant droid.
Yeah.
Was down there, and he's like, tell me what Earth is like. No, you know what? Just show me what it was like. So she has a little projection thing and shows him, and it's what we saw in the opening 20 minutes of the movie. It's, smog and garbage and sandstorms and terribleness. But he's already set his course for Earth.
Yeah.
They're already on their way back.
Right.
And he's like, this isn't what I thought it was. But when they get there, there is that hope.
Right. Well, it's funny because it's like, this was the city, but then where they end up landing, there's like that little forest that's kind of like sprouted up.
Exactly.
You know, so it's not all bad.
They went looking for that. You know, they got their little scanners out, telepathy scanners, and, did the whole thing looking for that plant life.
Right. I liked it.
I loved it. Again, it's one of those things. It's not hard to enjoy the movie especially when you're sitting down. It's like, I don't remember the last time I watched it. Probably when I bought the Blu-ray a number of years ago. It was probably the last time I actually physically sat down and wanted to watch it from start to finish. You pick it up on TV here and there, but actually sitting down to watch it, and I'm like, God damn, these Disney guys really know how to really get you in the old chest.
I was watching something Disney-related on YouTube, and of course I was.
Sure.
They were doing they had a part of the live character initiative. They had built a Wally. And he would walk around, like roll around in the park and interact with guests.
An actual Wally.
Yeah. It never came to fruition because they were afraid that it was going to roll over people's feet.
What?
And so it was heavy. So if it
you know, I'm sorry. That's a cop out.
That is a cop out.
Because they had pushed the trash can in Tomorrowland for years until his contract ran out.
Right. But the difference was Wally has the big tire treads.
Sure.
Whereas you would have to be on top of the trash can, or the trash can would have to be on top of you.
Yeah.
So there was, there's just not.
Yeah, I think they could make it work if they really wanted to. I mean, granted, stuff like that, although in this, it's a weird thing, in this day and age, it would have to be a special attraction type of thing just because people would just mob it. At this point, it's not, I know people always, when they look at Walt Disney World commercials and they see the characters just frolicking about throughout, it's like, that doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
You know, there was a time in the 80s where they could just walk. Now it's like they need an escorted person. They got security around because literally everybody's just running up for pictures and stuff like that. And it's like, you can't.
Well, and it's also they've just created the spots for them to go. So it's like you can have somebody be out there in this very, very air-conditioned environment because it's inside a building. Yeah. So, in July when it's 110 degrees out and muggy as all hell, You know? Yeah, you're inside a building, so you can...
And you got the 18-year-old sweating their ass off inside this felt costume.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, they're not wandering around Frontierland.
Right. Okay, yeah. But, I mean, they used to.
I know.
It was a thing. Those commercials are based in reality.
They are.
They're based on true events.
Yeah.
They're just no longer true.
I wish that, and Jay's talked about this before, is I wish that, like, sometimes, like, they would just join you on the ride. And I know that it would be a logistical nightmare.
Again, like the commercials.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Where it's just like, yeah. Goofy's just going to be in this one, yeah. on this one.
Constantly seeing those commercials with like a Chewbacca on Rock and Roller Coaster. It's like, yeah, the head would fall off.
Yeah, right.
The thing goes upside down and very fast. He would show up at the end of the ride without a head.
Yeah, right. I mean, it would have to be like
a human head at least.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Try putting one of those tall characters on Space Mountain. I have to duck.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, that terrifies me.
That is the most terrifying thing, is because I'm seeing just poles. And I don't know how tall they are because it's pitch black.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the scary part, is that you see the reflection of the edge.
And shadows, yeah.
Of the edge.
So I'm constantly like hunched.
And it's crazy because I'm not super tall, right? And you've ridden this thing a million times. Yeah. And so you're far taller than I am. Yeah. So I'm perfectly fine. But I still feel like I'm going to get my head chopped off.
And the funny thing is, I just found maybe a week or so ago, maybe Bill shared it with me. I'm not 100%. It was basically a full-on front car in-ride video with the lights on of Space Mountain.
Oh, cool.
Did you share it with me?
I don't think so, but I've definitely seen that before.
And it's
terrifying.
It is, but it's also like, oh, those beams aren't as close as I thought they
were. Yeah, no, they're definitely not. I have a friend who works down there that he's 6'6", and every time I go on with him, he puts his hands up in the air. So he knows. That seems insane to me. He knows.
I'm like picturing fingerless gloves as my regular attire.
Yeah, you know?
It's higher than you think, but it looks low.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's scary.
Yeah, and especially when it's completely pitch black, all you're seeing, like you said, is reflections and shadows. It's a bit on the scary side. Right. But how do we get there from Wally?
They had
push the trash can. Yeah,
they had the live character initiative, and he was a part of it.
I see. Another thing that they do in this, speaking of Walt Disney World, this is another one of the movies that definitely, I don't know, I don't want to say pokes fun, but definitely takes nods from what Walt Disney wanted Epcot to be.
Right.
You see the people movers.
Yeah.
You see the broken down monorail in Wally's Earth.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, this was at one time a utopian society.
Right, yeah.
And even how they have the cruise ship set up, it has that central hub. Everybody kind of is on their people movers.
Right, yeah.
Like, this is the shit that he was pitching to Florida, basically.
Right, yeah.
This is the world we're going to build for you.
Right.
This is how people are going to live. And damn it, they're kind of pushing that in these movies. Another one that really does it, I feel, is, I mean, it's almost a direct ripoff of his, if you watch it on YouTube, it was one of the old Wonderful World of Disney's when he was literally introducing the original Epcot plan in Iron Man 2.
Yeah, yes.
With Tony
so
Stark's
true.
Dad.
Yeah.
It's literally that video. He's sitting there, and instead of a globe, it's just like a point.
A spire
or something like that. But I'm like, it's Walt's office.
Yeah.
He's sitting on the desk in the same way. He's got the cigarette on the I'm like, what the
it's
hell
clearly,
is
it?
He's got the Walt Disney mustache. I'm like, you. And they didn't own Marvel at that point.
No, they didn't.
They were just like, yeah, okay, this is.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
So now, do you subscribe to the connected Pixar universe theory?
Go on.
So there is a big thing online, and I'm not going to get into it, but that all of the Pixar movies are connected, and all of them are, they're all connected, and they all end up, it's all Boo trying to find Sully. That's the whole, you've never heard this thing?
That one's, I mean, I accept that they're all connected in a certain way. Like we mentioned, I mean, the Pizza Planet truck shows up in every thing. I mean, there's always those nods.
So,
you know, like he had a Rex and a Ham in his thing, and those are toys in Toy Story. So that.
Yeah. So basically the idea is that Cars takes place before Wall-E. So everybody on the planet, they get out of, they leave, all the Earth people leave, and the cars, because if the toys are sentient, there's no reason why the cars can't be.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cars take over the planet, and that's why there's all that smog in Wall-E.
So Wall-E is like the apocalypse after Cars.
Correct. And that's...
I knew I didn't like that movie for a reason.
I hated Cars.
I am not a Cars fan.
Oh, God.
And it might be my Owen Wilson thing that I can't stand him.
Never seen it.
Yeah.
And it took me so long to watch it.
Never seen it.
Took me so fucking long.
Well, it's so... That one makes me the maddest because it's like... So...
I hear the ride's amazing.
I bet. Sure. I love The Incredibles, right? Okay. I am so excited for Incredibles 2.
Okay.
But somehow, Cars got two sequels and a spinoff.
Planes was awful.
Before
Dane Cook led Pixar movie.
And a ride at Disneyland.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, and a ride. It's just like, God.
Ride, a land.
And a hotel.
It's a whole land.
A whole land. Yeah.
It's Cars Land out
there. That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hate it.
I can take the themed hotel at Outer Vanimation. I get that.
Yeah, right. It's part, yeah.
I mean, Mighty Ducks have a friggin' wing of one of the hotels, but a Cars Land. And I hear the ride is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But I just was not a fan of that movie whatsoever.
No, thank you.
And I've sat through the sequels. I used to do overnights, so eventually you run out of shit to watch.
Right.
And it's like, all right, it's been 3 years. I'll give it a watch. That's the only reason I've watched Planes. Oh, terrible.
What is Fire and
Rescue I haven't watched. I haven't got to the sequel of the spinoff.
What is Planes?
It's the same thing, just in the air. Dane Cook is the lead.
Oh, terrible.
So you got Owen Wilson on one, Dane Cook on another.
No, thank you.
What were you thinking? Really?
And Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, yeah, he is in that one.
He's in Cars.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, the main character of 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah.
Talk about swinging a miss.
Yeah, Cars was definitely... But you know what the problem is? Much like the Adam Sandler discussions we've had, they make a shitload of money.
Right.
They obviously enough to build a fucking land.
Well, the kids loved it.
Like, of course they do. Know? It's not hard to please a kid.
Right.
I mean, Jesus, that's not difficult. But, yeah, I mean... These things, they just make a ton of money regardless of what they are and how they are. You know, like I said, much like the Adam Sandler movies. That's why he's got 7 picture deals getting renewed at Netflix.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. The Ridiculous 6 was terrible.
I won't watch that.
I won't watch
that. I will not watch his net. Like, I pay for Netflix.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm not going to subscribe to the theory that I just have to watch it. I'm not going to do that.
No.
Not going to do it. So no. If we do that, I'm coming over here and watching it on yours. I'm not putting that on my goddamn Netflix.
It's sure. not going to show up in your watched list ever.
No, it's not my recent because I know how Netflix works. And they'll give me, because you watch this, here's 47 shitty movies that you're not going to watch. And I'm going to hate everything. And especially now, I'm going to get off on a rant in a second. But now, the way Netflix is, when you fucking, especially if you watch it on the TV, no matter what you hover over, if you're sitting there like, oh, do I want to watch? The fucking trailer starts.
Oh, yeah.
And that bothers the shit out of me. Bothers me to no end.
Why?
I don't. It's almost like they're subliminally saying, you need to watch. Just push play. You can't sit and just think for a second. Like, the movie just ended. All right, what else am I going to watch? Click. Like, oh, I just want to sit and think in my own head. Don't tell me what I'm going to. Oh, if I want to watch a fucking trailer, I'll watch a fucking trailer.
Okay.
Wally.
Keep going.
Just got filthy all of a sudden.
I like rants. Keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 So that's my latest that's my struggle right now.
And that's Wally.
Yeah, that's Wally.
Woof. So we're going to have to watch some terrible Netflix stuff, but watch the trailer first.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I can't wait. So I think that wraps it up. I think we've exhausted Wally.
We did, yeah, yes, yes. Ultimately, I mean, I'm with Bill in the respect that it's not my favorite Pixar movie.
No,
I feel I enjoyed it a bit more.
Right,
but again, they're doing so much, and they're churning stuff out like at such a rate now. And also, I can't really tell the difference nowadays between Disney Animation Studio and Pixar and how they decide which one gets
which. Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
Like, I love Wreck-It Ralph. Can't wait for the sequel to come out.
But how is that not Pixar?
But how does it not look exactly like Pixar?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't understand either.
The only thing I can imagine is it has something to do with if Lasseter's producing it or not.
Right,
that's got to be my. That's the only thing common sense would tell me.
Yeah, that is the only thing that common sense would say.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they separate or how they choose to separate.
Especially now that we're all under one house.
Right.
You know, just throw Mickey up there. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Just yeah.
Yeah.
So,
all right, coming up next week, for those of you listening on demand or watching on demand, coming up next week, we are watching and talking about the 1998 Peter Berg film starring Cameron Diaz and Christian Slater, Very Bad Things.
Very bad movie.
Oh, really?
I was not. Oh. I was not into it.
So you're going to want to definitely check that out, because we're going to have differing opinions on that one.
I was not into it.
But for those of you watching live right now, this is why you should subscribe to the live shows. You're going to get that live in just about 2 minutes. So don't go anywhere. Stay right on twitch.tv/NewAgeInsidersTV, because we're going to be coming to you live momentarily with Very Bad Things. Bye-bye. Sunday clothes, we're gonna ride through town in one of those new horse-drawn open cars. We'll see the shows at Delmonico's, and we'll close the town in a whirl.